It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Sozi!
No, that's Matthew Sozi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sozi.
Let me just quote the late, great Colonel Sanders, who said, I'm too drunk to taste this chicken.
Hello there, film lovers, and welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sozi. This show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog.
That's right.
It exists. Mm-hmm. It's a real blog, and it's pretty good.
It's terrific.
And you can check it out at?
Filmsociology.tumblr.com.
The voice you heard is a man working on not one, but two fantasy football pools.
Yeah.
That's Kobe Slagle.
Yep.
Means our annual The Silver Stakes game.
Oh, yes.
This
will
be
Silver Stakes
the
game.
The third year. See, by the way, Christopher Lloyd of the Film App is also here. And by the way, welcome back to Civilization.
Thank you very much.
Because you have a second child in the house.
He was hibernating.
Yes, he was hibernating. Papa Bear.
We were nesting.
Nesting, sure. Sure, that's good. So, anyway, good to have you here. And
not to be confused with lining our nests, just nesting.
That's good. Okay. See, we have more inside information here at WFYI. The Silver Stakes game is the annual fantasy football game between my football fantasy football team and Kobe's fantasy football team. And if we win, because I love sports fans that say we.
If you guys win.
You have to watch a scary or freaky movie of my choice.
Yep.
And if you win, I give you a Pam Grier movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it is a win-win. Even though you're lovely fiance.
Yeah, and we won last year.
Yeah, you did. So what do you think, a streak is happening now?
I don't know.
Do you have momentum?
We do have momentum going into the season.
Really?
Of course, the draft hasn't happened yet.
No. And make sure you just, it's really all about just beating the Tommy Wiseau All-Stars, right?
It's what we play for every year. Is
really?
To beat the All-Stars. Yep.
That's it. Not a championship. Just don't be those people. Although, unfortunately, your lovely fiancé does not get the whole Pam Grier thing. Got to work.
I'm yet to show her Jackie Brown, which I think...
What the hell's wrong with you?
Well,
what are you waiting for?
I think once that happens...
She'll get it?
Yeah.
She better. Or will the marriage be off? Like the football quiz in Diner. Which I did a modified... I did a film quiz for my wife. Now, of course, they were very obvious answers, like, you know, which film did Pam Grier not appear in? And one of the answers was Bridge on the River Kwai. Needless to say, she passed all five questions. Anyway, so see, you will also get you know, from time to time, marital and parental advice, Kobe, from our guest and host here.
Our esteemed panel.
Our esteemed panel of two.
On the other side of the board here.
Yeah, specifically my advice would be don't wait until your 40s to have kids, because it's heck.
It's tiring. Try having a tween in your 40s. That's also tiring.
It's heck.
Or, as I always remember, Sammy Terry giving you advice, no, Kobe, save yourself. All right. Now that we've warmed up, usually this starts about 9 a.m., waiting on that book, too. Greg Sestero has a book about the making of The Room.
Oh, yes, he does.
That's coming out in October, I think. I'm going to, of course, try to get him on Film Sociology so we can have two acting members of The Room involved with this program. All right. Opening in theaters today. Now, I guess we'll start with what we didn't see. One of the big documentaries that's really getting a lot of talk, and not just at NPR, is the documentary Blackfish, which is finally coming to Indianapolis. And as you were saying, I'll let you say it. This film is being hyped up as...
I've heard it on social media and virtually everywhere. Basically, what people say is, if you see this movie, you will never go to SeaWorld again. Because it's all about, you know, how the orca whales in captivity are, I guess, just their whole experience and what happens to them. I don't have too much information on that. But what was the Oscar-winning documentary from a couple years ago with the dolphins being killed in Japan? What was that called?
Oh, you'd ask me that, wouldn't you?
But people say that it's basically akin to that. You'll never think the same about something that
you've heard
about.
The Cove. Yeah. The Cove, that's it.
You'll never be as complacent about this subject once you've seen this movie because it's so disturbing.
So you should rent The Cove and this and then watch Super Size Me. I think that's... And you'll never do anything ever again.
The triple middle finger to the corporate interests of the world.
Or Food Inc.
Yeah.
Food Inc., that's another fun one. Or as Emma refers to it, the movie I don't like.
Mm.
Because
the one?
Well, Dad was on a really good streak of showing Emma movies, and then I thought I'm going to be this good dad and show her what the food industry is like, and you know, fresh food and everything, and you know how much it costs and all that. And I didn't watch the documentary ahead of time, and the very first scene is on a chicken farm and what they do to chicks who are not up to size.
Yeah.
Needless to say, I think Emma was 7, 8. To use her words, it didn't end good.
No,
so
not end good.
So I stopped it. So anytime we were walking in the then existing Blockbuster, she would recognize the movie poster or the video box, which was the cow with the barcode on it. And she'd go, "Look, Dad, there's the movie I don't like." And about every 6 months, I said, "Honey, should we try watching it again without that scene?"
No.
So anyway, there's that. We also have the voiceover comedy In a World, which has been getting much coverage here on NPR. Directed and starring Lake Bell, Rob Caudry's in it as well, Nick Offerman, and it's the world of voiceover actors, and a young lady is trying to get into it as well. I know Fresh Air had, I believe, Lake Bell, and Fred Melamed. And here at WFY at Film Sociology, we love character actors and actresses. That guy, that lady.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, that guy. Well, I didn't realize until this interview that Fred Melamed was also in A Serious Man.
Oh.
He's the guy whose wife.
Oh, that guy.
Did you see A Serious Man?
No, I
then
was
shut
just,
up.
I was hoping Chris would join me on that.
So you're really not knowing who this person is, but he's the guy that his wife leaves for him. So anyway, and I have a couple other that guys that we're going to talk about a little later on and when we get to the DVD section. But also out there is Planes, which according to some reports was going to go straight to DVD, and then they decided to just put it out there. It's a plane with the voice of Dane Cook. There, Kobe.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because, you know,
so you're definitely not seeing it, Kobe Slagle.
No.
New. Nope.
Not going to support him.
No.
Yes. Apparently, no. I think The Onion said doing his best Owen Wilson impression.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I thought Owen Wilson was in that.
No, he's in Cars.
Oh,
see, this
goodness.
These are Planes and the other movie Cars.
But they have the same eyes.
And they have the same storyline, apparently. Well, we'll see.
The storyline from the original Cars is amazingly similar. It's about, you know, instead of having like a fancy race car, it's about, you know, a humble young plane who wants to be a race plane, but, you know, he's just a crop duster and they don't want to let him do it, so everyone laughs at him, but he perseveres, and guess what happens in the end?
What do you think, Cole?
He does it.
He becomes the Memphis Belle.
Yeah, and he has a goofy
sidekick.
You know,
that's not
IQ
Larry the
Challenge
Cable guy.
Sidekick, who's a truck, and he has
a
grizzly older mentor who really wants nothing to do with him. But then,
not voiced by Paul Newman, but by Stacey Keach.
By Stacey Keach, and Stacey Keach is a poor man's Paul Newman.
Yeah, but I like Stacey Keach though. Still, I mean, the guy did Fat City.
He did do Fat City, but
and The Long Riders. And The Killer Inside Me.
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't do Hunt. I get it. So.
Chris isn't impressed.
Welcome to defending Stacey Keach here at Film Sociology.
So let me tell you about planes. So the official tagline on this is "From above the world of cars."
Naturally.
And the animation is done all by this animation studio that's in Mumbai, India, with I think a little bit of stateside stuff. And as you mentioned there, with Dane Cook and Stacey Keach and Brad Garrett.
Yes.
And Julie Louis-Dreyfus. Yeah. And how shall I put this nicely? I mean, poor man's whatever. Poor man's Owen Wilson. Poor man's
cars.
Yeah. Not the A team. So
and not the A, not the film, the A team.
The filmmaker and writer both got their start doing those straight to video Tinkerbell movies from the last 5-6 years or so.
That guy.
Not the same one, but yeah. So it looks like, by all reckoning, this was supposed to be a straight-to-video venture.
And that worked for Toy Story 2, but not with this one.
Do you really think – I've heard that they really intended Toy Story 2 to be straight-to-video.
Yeah, I think so.
Which is, for my money, it's such a better film than the first Toy Story.
Well, and think about where they were as far as sequels. And then, you know, I think that – didn't that help spawn the direct-to-DVD sequel plague?
Could be. So,
I think.
So here's the thing. Officially, this is not a Pixar movie. It does not carry the, you know, the little spotlight logo. It does not have, you know, it's officially, we have to have the disclaimer, not a Pixar movie. It's a Disney movie.
Right.
But it's a Pixar movie.
We're not saying that, but it is.
So basically, they brought in, you know, some down market people to do some down market stuff. And that's what this is. This is basically a spinoff of a Cars movie. And it's not awful, but it ain't good. And
we got a new clip.
I was having this debate with other people, with fellow film yapper Nick Rogers and others on Facebook and other social media the other day, which basically saying, hey, it's not a Pixar movie, so don't slam Pixar because it's not good. And I said, that's not the point. This thing was executive produced by John Lasseter, Mr. Pixar, now Mr. Disney Animation.
That's actually on his card. It says Mr. Pixar.
It's totally a spinoff of their intellectual creation of the Cars world. I mean, you still have, like, the little forklift guys, and you have Cars in it. You don't have Lightning McQueen. You don't have...
Is there an Italian plane voiced by Tony Shalhoub?
No. That would be awesome. But, you know, the very fact that they would just sort of churn out this down-market clone of a Pixar movie just shows how much Pixar has lost the stamp of specialness that they really had. I mean, their last three movies, Cars 2, Brave, and Monsters University, were all decent movies.
But
nothing special.
Not the home runs like of past.
And just the fact that, you know, these are the guys that, you know, 6-7 years ago, I mean, I took to referring to them as the sorcerers of Pixar just because they could seem to do no wrong.
Right.
It's like, you know, think
about that streak of films that they made.
Finding Nemo, you know, and Wall-E.
Yeah.
I mean, just movie after movie, it was just, you know, like the terrible ones were just very good.
Right. I remember when we hit Cars.
Yeah, we said
Cars was Doc Hollywood animated, and what a letdown. But it's still pretty good.
It's still really good. Yeah. So the fact that the very fact that this movie exists bothers me. To take something a term from my day job and apply it to this situation, they are devaluing their brand.
Wow.
So that's my take on Cars.
So that means
our planes,
boats, and trains are coming soon.
Oh man!
You know those are in development. Maybe no matter what IMDb says. Do you have a response there?
It's not hella bad.
Apparently, it is hella bad. Lisa and Cosby. Okay, so also opening in theaters, we're the Millers, and we have three men in studio, and none of us saw a film where Jennifer Aniston was a stripper.
Unfortunately, they screened it the same night as The Planes. It was supposed to have its own night, but then they moved it. So I do know our good friend Richard Probst from The Independent Critic has seen it, and he has a review up on his website,
TheIndependentCritic.com.
So go check that out.
That's good.
He actually is really up on it. He called it much funnier than you expect. The basic story there is Jason Sudeikis is a drug dealer who's trying to do a deal, and so there he's trying to disguise himself as a normal guy, you know, Midwest person in an RV. So he recruits all these scuzzy people to play normals.
And boy, scuzzy mean Jennifer Aniston and Emma Stone.
Yeah, so Emma Stone's supposed to be a runaway, and she's supposed to be a stripper. Come on, it's Jennifer Aniston. There's not going to be, you know, it's going to be one of those those PG-13 stripper things.
You mean under things, and they keep, and she keeps them on.
Yeah, you know, where you're sort of astonished. You know, what were they like to have? You know, like 10 times as much square footage of clothing on her as any other stripper in the back in the background.
It's gonna be hard to top the living room scene in Horrible Bosses, but that's just me.
Yeah. But kind of reviews all over that. But go check out Richard at least to see what he has to say.
And of course, you can go to Nuvo and check out Ed Johnson Ott's reviews of We're the Millers and Blackfish, as well as Act of Killing, which we'll get to in a little bit. There's also a second Percy Jackson film. I don't know if anybody asked for a second Percy Jackson film.
Yeah, I was sort of astonished. A, the fact that up until 2 weeks ago, I had not heard anything about it.
Right.
And just that, they made a sequel, because I don't recall the first one did particularly well.
I don't think it did, but I think they're still trying to force another children's literature or young adult literature franchise down some folks' throats.
It's snoozable.
This one's called Percy Jackson Sea of Monsters, and it's not nearly as fun a title as Percy Jackson and the Olympians, because that sounds like a band that would play at the Madam Walker Theater or at the Murat. So, my goal is to find some 1974 recordings of Percy Jackson and the Olympians. Yeah. That would be cool.
He just really didn't do.
So we got them all cut for Elysium?
He was just playing one of your clips. So.
I talked over myself.
We'll go with Elysium, and then we'll get into The Act of Killing. So the director of District 9, which was, I remember, one of my most fun experiences was watching this film with Abdul-Hakim Shabazz, and us watching, going, really? You're really going to go down? They are going down this path. Yeah. So we started to say things like, some of my best friends are aliens.
Yeah.
It was like, it's South Africa, they're aliens, but there's dog fighting, and there's scenes that look a lot like Cops, and could be South Africa, to steal a line from Chris Rock, could be South Africa, could be Boston. It's either one of those. So anyway, he has a new film called Elysium with Matt Damon and Jodie Foster and the dude from District 9. Chris, you saw it. Does it even come close to District 9?
No, it doesn't. Because, District 9 was such a wildly original film. I mean, yes, it was pretty heavy-handed in some of the symbolism and the political themes like that, but it was effective. I mean, I don't mind heavy-handed if it's good heavy-handed. Like, Oliver Stone, every movie Oliver Stone ever made was heavy-handed, but when he's on, he's on. And unfortunately, this time it's just off. There's been a lot of chatter online and from like conservatives slamming this movie for supposedly having a leftist bent. It does, but I didn't mind that so much in the movie. It's heavy-handed, but it's not. The political over-theme stuff is still pretty effective. The whole setup is all the rich people on Earth have left, and they're floating on this big, huge space station called Elysium.
Or Hamilton County.
Where everything is great. and so everything on Earth is just absolute, garbage everywhere.
Overcrowding, East Downtown.
Disease, crime, right. Everything like that. And, of course, all the people on Elysium are white, and most of the people left on Earth are brown.
Or Matt Damon.
Or brown or Matt Damon.
Charlton Copley, who was the star in District 9 and the crazy guy in A-Team. But anyway, go on.
I don't mind that. My problem with this movie is that the whole setup just makes no sense. The setup is everything in this movie hinges around what I've come to call the magic cure boxes, which is that...
Not per boxes, cure boxes.
They have these medical bays.
Oh, not Robert Smith.
Like we've seen them in other sorts of movies, but the idea is it's a bed with a, screen and stuff, and you lie down in it, and it can heal or cure anything. It's gone.
Didn't they borrow this from Prometheus? Remember the girl with the dragon tattoo had...
Yeah, but see, there's actually, surgery, and it's painful. Here, no, it's just it's like Star Trek-y. There's, warm light, buzz, and you're better.
For those on radio, Chris was waving his fingers over the magic tail, because that's what doctors do.
At one point, a character in this movie, I will not say who, literally gets half of their head blown off. I mean, it's half a head. And they put him in a magic cure box, and boom, he's fine. I mean, even his beard comes back trimmed to the same length as it was before.
Diego Luna?
Here's the thing. They've got these on Elysium. They're so common. Every single house has one. Even the houses that are for sale that no one's in them, they're in there and they're hooked up and turned on.
Well, yeah.
Every government building has one. Every public building has one. So they're everywhere. But there's none on Earth because the evil, rich, Republican white people don't want anyone on Earth to have one.
He said Republican.
Why? That's the big question, is why? Because The only problem that they have on Elysium, the singular problem in their beautiful white person utopia, is that they keep getting all these illegal immigrants from Earth who are sneaking up there.
Taking all the good jobs.
No, guess what they're doing? They're coming there for the magic cure boxes.
Yes.
So you have this idiot setup where, okay, we're evil people who don't want any of the folks on Earth to have our magic cure boxes.
Evil
Republican
people.
But our only problem here in our existence is that people keep sneaking up to use them. So why wouldn't they just install a few of these down planet side to take away their own problems?
You're trying to take away Elysium's freedoms.
Because then you wouldn't have a movie.
So that's the response.
So the setup is Matt Damon's bad guy gone straight, factory worker. He gets irradiated. Now he's got 5 days to live, so he's got to get up to Elysium to save himself. Runs into an old girlfriend. Her daughter has, end-stage leukemia, so now she needs to get up there.
Is this a gated planet?
Oh, big time gated. and so they have to come up with a way. They hook up with a crime lord. And so they outfit him with this cool exoskeleton that they literally screw it into his brain and his spine. Now he's not only not immediately dying of irradiation, but he's all super strong and stuff. Charlton Copley plays an operative who comes after him. So, once that's set up, the one-third point of the movie on, it becomes one big chase movie.
Uh-huh.
As a chase movie, it's not bad. It's engaging. There's some cool action scenes. But, the whole idea of being a politically themed science fiction drama, I didn't mind. I just didn't like the fact that it didn't make any sense, and it wasn't. It's okay to do crazy, fantastic things in movie. You can make up any story or situation that you want. But once you've created that, it has to have its own internal logic. And this movie has no internal logic.
Wow. Now, our colleague Lou Harry has dubbed Jodie Foster in this as the apparently overtaking Sigourney Weaver in Avatar as the worst female performance in a science fiction film.
I thought Sigourney Weaver was just fine in Avatar, but... she's not good in it, and of course it's Jodie Foster, who at this point is only making a movie once every 3 or 4 years, and usually is pretty darn good in it, because mm-hmm. she's Jodie Foster. Yeah, she's not particularly good. Her character, she plays the Secretary of Defense on Elysium.
Republican Secretary of Defense.
Well, aren't they all? So that, of course she takes a very hard line, like when shuttles of illegal immigrants from Earth are coming in, she just wants to shoot them down, and the namby-pamby, leadership doesn't want to do that, so now... she's trying to actually take over Elysium secretly and gets going this whole back and forth with the Damon character and the Charlton Copley character.
Does she accidentally shoot a fellow hunter in the face?
Yeah. No, she doesn't. Her and Matt Damon have one scene together that lasts maybe 30 seconds, and he's tied up and bound and gagged and never says anything. So it's sort of
I think that costs extra in Japan. But
it was sort of like that movie with where they finally got Pacino and De Niro together.
Right.
Yeah, and then they had one scene. One scene together was kind of disappointing. This is like
no
that.
Way. The heat scene was fine.
Well, people were expecting a whole movie of them going back and forth.
Well,
and
that's their problem. They got Righteous killed. Now be quiet.
Yeah. So here that was pretty disappointing.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, she was not good at it. I don't think necessarily because her performance wasn't bad. It's just the
poorly
concept
written.
Of the character was very limited.
Right.
It's the sort of thing that if it wasn't a Jodie Foster level actress in it, they probably would have just been a character that you almost could have written out of the movie.
Okay. Well, that's a shame. That is a bummer.
I'm really disappointed because this is not a bad movie. You're not going to see me walk around saying, don't go see this piece of junk. I was really looking forward to Elysium. I mean, I had it marked when the year started of this is one of my movies I really want to see, and I was really disappointed with it.
Well, also opening in theaters today is a film called The Act of Killing. And I would definitely say read Ed Johnson-Ott's review of it in Nuvo. I got to watch it a couple of days ago. This is the only thing I wound up seeing this week. And in some ways, between this and the DVD releases I watched this week, I'm really ready to see Taming of the Shrew and The Canal tonight. So I need something uplifting. This is a documentary about, it was from Joshua Oppenheimer, and it's reuniting, strangely enough, political assassins from Indonesia in the 60s. When the military took over Indonesia, they basically executed, I guess, over 1 million people easily. And so the director had the idea of getting them back together, these guys, it reminded me of Barbara Schroeder making the documentary on Idi Amin. Apparently, Idi Amin wanted to be a movie star.
Yeah.
And the fact that he gets these guys from the 1960s to come back and they reenact some of the scenes of brutality. And then some of the killers get to play some of the victims. And it reminded me of, Werner Herzog, who's an executive producer on this, and of course still on my wish list to do voiceover work, he had one called Little Dieter Needs the Fly, which was about a Vietnam POW, a soldier who was a POW in Vietnam, and they reenact some of the things that he went through in the POW camp. Now, they made a fictional film of that with Christian Bale many, many years later, but for 2 hours to watch these guys, and the scenes where they're mixing in with the local neighborhood businessmen, criminals, and doing things like looking for actors to reenact these, women, children. There's even scenes where some of the local neighborhood businessmen, criminals, are shaking down businesses for money for the good of the cause. You see a youth political party that does not mind being called fascist or gangsters because gangsters get results. Sounds like Dirty Harry talking to the chief. And even scenes where, like I said, where they apparently their big choice of brutality was beheading via wire, and you know, having an actor sit down with his hands behind his back and this probably 70-year-old man wrapping a wire around his neck and then basically talking through, then I would come over here and then I would lean on this. Really unsettling to watch. And going through this, you wonder if any of them have any signs of regret. And there is one scene. It probably won't go far enough for those who wind up suffering through this. I mean suffering in a good way. It's a hard watch, but I think it's worth it. But I just thought for sheer audacity, sheer chutzpah, kudos to Joshua and to Werner, because I know he had a lot to do with this, as far as getting this made. It's a piece of history I don't know enough about, and hopefully this will start people to check out more of what happened in Indonesia and still going on today in some way, shape, or form.
It sounds interesting. It's one of those documentaries that someone should really come up with a clever name for it, but you see more and more of them. The only way I could describe it would be you're watching a documentary in which what they're documenting is the act of making this movie.
Right.
Does that make any sense?
Yes.
I've seen several documentaries. I saw a couple of different documentaries at Indie Film Fest this year that would fall into that category. It's like, what's your movie about? The movie is about us making this documentary.
Yes. So that would be like somebody making a documentary about Hearts of Darkness.
Yeah.
Apocalypse of Darkness, the making of Hearts of Darkness. Well, somebody might do that.
Tiny, a Story About Living Small, another one. Very good documentary from Indie Film Fest that's essentially about the act of making the movie.
Very cool. Now, Kobe.
Yep.
I know right now at the Art Craft Cinema, today's the 8th?
9th.
So tonight and tomorrow night at the Art Craft Theater in Franklin, Doris Day and Calamity Jane. So you can see her not dolled up. She is rootin' tootin' Calamity Jane. That's the song Secret Love. I love the use of that song in the documentary The Celluloid Closet. Fun stuff. I know there's also the 48-hour film project, which is tomorrow night at 4 o'clock. And there's a bunch of screenings there. And Kobe, what's going on with your screen?
With my screen?
Your screen. I have papers. You have a screen.
Yes. This weekend at IU Cinema, we have tonight, Friday night, and tomorrow at 7 p.m., the 2013 Sundance Film Festival Shorts program.
Cool.
Cool.
Yes.
Good.
And also tomorrow, The Machine, which makes everything disappear.
Planes.
Documentary, foreign language. That's tomorrow, IU Cinema. Tonight at the IMA, would you believe it's sold out? Hoosiers.
Yeah, I actually can believe it's sold out because it's Hoosiers in Indiana.
Yeah.
You think that's what they're going to say out there?
Yep.
They're all going to sound like, they're all, we can't hear Tyler. He's in another country right now.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yes, you missed it last week. You will appreciate this, Chris Lay, because I know, I'm sure you're waiting to see my reaction over assistant coach, Rasheed Wallace that I'm so excited for in Detroit. That's a thing.
That's for real now?
I'm afraid that's for real. Ewing? We're just plucking old players and letting them sit on the bench. But no, last week's show, which reunited Mr. Slagle and myself, my wedding shower gift, not the wedding gift, because y'all get two sets of presents.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that what that party was all about? You're the groom. You don't know a damn thing.
I don't know we get two sets of presents.
I think you do.
Oh.
The groom's job is to just nod your head at all the wedding planning and then say, I do.
See? And the mother of the groom, as my wife and Chuck Goda said, show up, shut up, and wear beige. So, no, we had, because I'm full disclosure, I'm in Kobe's wedding party. That should be fun. I'll be the old guy going, are you sure you want to do that?
Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm leaving now. Let's see how you feel tomorrow at noon. And by the way, don't do the bachelor party the night before.
No.
Don't do it. A week. Yeah. We'll see. The old guys say a week. So we had a gathering, a get together with the wedding party and mm-hmm. friends, and I didn't have anything ready. So I flipped out. I got the perfect gift for Kobe and Bianca. Kobe, would you like to share to Chris Lloyd, basketball fan, what your wedding shower gift from me was?
Matthew's gift to the Dreyer Slagle wedding shower 2013 was a pair, not matching, but complementing, sized extra large authentic Pacers jerseys, Tyler Hansbrough, a gold, and then a 70s retro.
Wow.
Marked down, of course. Marked way down.
Way, way down.
Well, and the thing is, it looks like a damn dress on him. It really does. But I don't know his size, and I don't think it's good for me to call Bianca and go, what are your measurements? And it's not good calling either sets of parents going, what are their measurements? So you got a dress. Enjoy it.
Yes.
You have sleepwear as well. Okay, we've gotten the basketball jersey portion of film sociology done. That's good.
Check that off.
Check that off the list. I'm looking
to see on the blog right now if I put a picture of that up, but I've got you with your CD that you got in the mail last week.
In a shrink wrap
mm-hmm.
envelope.
Bag.
Sad. Bag, basically. All right, let's take a short break, and we'll talk about what's new on DVD and Blu-ray, and we have several dead people we like. Because we don't have time for dead people we don't like. You're listening to Film Sociology, and as Chris would say, you're watching Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
Any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs.
You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them. What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open a video store.
Blockbuster Video. Wow, what a difference.
Well, in case you didn't see it, here it is again.
Tyler Hansborough at Channel 13. You're gonna have to follow the Raptors to get more audio.
Yeah.
Because his reading of Brown Bear this year was quite the improvement.
Yes, it was.
Over Chicken Little.
Yeah.
Hi, welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, like why, you can go to msoci@WFYI.org.
Wow.
Or go to Facebook and Twitter at Matthew Soci. Hanging out with Christopher Lloyd from the Film Yap and Kobe Slagle. Despite it being kind of not the best week, all except for The Act of Killing, but as you've heard, not a date film.
Not a date film.
So, or if you do see it, Kobe, cleanse your palate. Watch Bob's Burgers immediately after. Don't go to bed after seeing Act of Killing. Not a good way to end the evening. So we'll just add that to that list. Great, but can you watch it again? So we're going to move on to a strong list of titles out on DVD and Blu-ray. And every year, a little bit more inside info, with the IFJA, the Indiana Film Journalists Association, we get together and we discuss things from time to time. And there's usually one film that somebody in the group will like and the others will not, and vice versa. And I think, Chris Lloyd, you have a candidate for this year as far as you're in defense of, and that's the science fiction greatest hits package known as Oblivion.
Yeah, I really liked Oblivion a lot. And I've had this several times this year. I've kind of like been the fringe guy on three or four
occasions. Not indie fringe, because that's coming up next week.
Yeah. Yes. This fringe, the fringe opinion guy.
Right.
I really liked Oblivion a lot. And the thing is, I recognize that it has a lot of tropes and things that it's lifted from other science fiction stories from time to time. But it really, I thought, assembled it in a really engaging and original way. I mean, really, tell me The Matrix isn't a whole lot of other different ideas.
First Matrix.
But yeah, particularly.
It's two and three. Well, I don't want to think about 2 and 3.
You know, the look of Blade Runner and other things. So, you know, when you're talking about certain genres like fantasy and science fiction, there's sort of like a dense mythology of ideas and concepts that sort of get plucked out and used in different ways.
So I'll ask you this, because I was not a fan, as I snarkingly said. There's, you know, lots of references to, oh my gosh, I Am Legend, and which is Omega Man, which was Last Man on Earth, and every other post-apocalyptic show that's out, A Boy and His Dog, and everything like this. Oh, by the way, it's his last job on the planet. You know, it's almost like the cop film. It's his last case.
It's my last case.
Yeah,
I'm retiring next week.
Right, and even a little bit of Vanilla Sky. But anyway, is science fiction a genre? Because you talk about there are elements of it that people will recognize. Same thing, but it's the same thing with the action film, but I think they're treated differently. I remember saying last week about Two Guns, I saw three Peckinpah homages in the first 10 minutes, and you've seen things from, you know, stuff blowing up in slow motion and, you know, walking away from an explosion that doesn't knock you over, you know, the handling of guns, things like that. So I'm wondering, do you think they're those two genres and their greatest hits packages, are they treated differently?
Maybe. I don't know. Just because the people who are really into science fiction see a lot of it. But for your average moviegoer, you know, that's not necessarily a science fiction
fan.
Not
us.
You know, they just experience it whenever, you know, a big movie comes out that is of that ilk. So maybe they wouldn't recognize the stuff that, you know, the familiar themes and patterns that, you know, somebody else would. So I don't know. It depends, I think, on who's seeing it.
Okay, so you're still sticking by Oblivion.
Really liked Oblivion a lot. I thought it was really ambitious. It had a lot of twists and turns that I didn't see coming. Of course, afterwards, you have people saying, like, I saw that. I knew that was going to happen.
I knew it was going to happen all the way.
Yeah, I don't know. They're smarter men and women than me, but because I didn't.
No, they're just snarkier and not as fun to hang out with. Oh, hi, I'm Matthew Soci.
I have to say, I think a certain level of it is just, you know, that sort of automatic Tom Cruise hate, which, I mean, granted, the guy's a doof. But
he said doof now.
I did say doof. And that's not a religious insult.
No, it's not.
There's a certain level of people just like, he has to like justify every movie that's coming out. It's like, why, you know, why are you still making movies? Because don't, we all hate you now. And I don't understand
that. That's not true.
I don't understand it. I mean, if he's making really bad movies, I'm happy to trash them. But to me, this is a really, really good movie.
I will tell you my one flaw about this film, because I can do this. I'm the host. There is a wonderful scene where he has his utopia, you know, his dream area, and he has vinyl, because he's an old-fashioned, old-school guy, collects vinyl.
Oh, yeah.
And I love it because you flip through a number of album covers that you recognize, and it's cool because cause then there's, it leaves it up to you, and then you see a scene where the needle drops onto the record. You don't see what the record is. So that opens it up to whatever they can get the rights to, they will use in the film. And I went through, and from what I learned in this scene, he picked Led Zeppelin's, I think it was Led Zeppelin 2, because Ramble On. That one or two? Two, sorry. He picked Led Zeppelin 2 over the Rolling Stones' Exile on Main Street. You're an idiot. I'm sorry. You're just flat dead wrong.
You soured on the movie right then.
I did. I was like, wrong. Can't be. So no, it's fine. Something that I liked a lot more, and our colleague Ed Johnson really liked, and I'm with him on this camp, is the Southern Island drama Mud.
Yeah.
Starring Matthew McConaughey, last year's comeback player of the year, by the way, plays a man living on an island, which I found out was shot in Arkansas, and two boys who discover him out there. He's on the run from the law. He wants to get back together with the love of his life, played by Reese Witherspoon. I wish all small town Southern women looked like Reese Witherspoon. And it kind of reminds me of the Southern Gothic drama stories like Undertow and George Washington was another one of those. You get to see the underbelly of the South. I mean, just the poor under, you know, and McConaughey has what we've been hoping for that's not in romantic comedies. The combination of charm and menace.
Yeah.
He was interviewed on Fresh Air last week about this film and kind of compared it to, and I know a lot of people had been saying this since The Time to Kill, that he was going to be the next Paul Newman, where he could play somebody like Hud and be a complete bastard and still be likable. And he obtains that with Mud. It's a very tense drama. A couple of people like Sam Shepard is a notable face that pops up as well. But it is a really well-done Southern Gothic drama. So that's out.
That's what I've heard. I did not get to see it in theaters. But based on your and Ed's devotion to it, it is in my Netflix queue and moved up to the top spot.
When the family is asleep.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, that's another important time, is go see movies when they're asleep. And there's also, I should mention, the two kids whose names that elude me, and I apologize, but they reminded me, first thing I remember writing it on my notes was Lucas Black and Sling Blade.
Wow. That,
which is another piece of fine small-town Southern drama. Yeah. So, also out, and these were the two films I watched back-to-back. I have sometimes an odd threshold of cinema pain, but I really liked both of these. I started with the latest Terrence Malick film, To the Wonder, which stars Ben Affleck. You see Elizabeth Banks showing up, Olga Korolenko
from Oblivion,
and she's in Oblivion, so it's an Olga week. If you get your Olga on,
that one barely got to the Wonder, barely got into theaters. It was just I heard about it, I read a thing or two about it, and the next thing I knew,
I don't think it even came to our fair city.
No, it did not come here.
So apparently there was enough of a backlash on Tree of Life, which I still liked and still wish had been shorter. This coming from the guy who wanted a longer version of The Thin Red Line. Shut up. But this is – you have Affleck and Olga are a couple. They're living in France. She has a daughter from another thing. And they decide to bring her back to live with him in the United States. And you know, they got to get married to get the visa. And, of course, it's beautifully shot Terrence Malick, which people, I think, is the dividing line. There's a lot of voiceover conversations in this, and there's a lot of, you know, the hands over the wheat field, you know, over the tall grass, which he's done in several films. I mean, Terrence Malick could make great travelogues. I think he should hang out with Rudy Maxa and do those European programs that we have on Create and WFYI television. But it, you know, it looks great. It's shorter than Tree of Life. It has a more concise through line than Tree of Life. We do not get an interruption of the history of the world as we know it. So that being said, I think this will still divide people that see it. I liked it. Just be warned. But I still think it's an easier slug through than Tree of Life. Also out, and then I followed that up with The Place Beyond the Pines, which reteams Ryan Gosling with the director and writer of Blue Valentine.
Right.
Don't watch that before you get married, Cobe.
Oh my God.
Excellent film, excellent performances. Don't watch it now.
Yeah.
Wait.
So Place Beyond the Pines, another one I missed, unfortunately. I've heard things all over the map about it. I've heard from people who really loved it, but in general, the critical and popular response has been pretty slack.
Well, as I knew the director character reuniting, and that the thing was 2 hours and 20 minutes, and that Ryan Gosling's in it, Bradley Cooper's in it. It turns out to be three stories in one. So I'm like, okay, 3 into 140 minutes. Okay. And the thing is, I don't want to give away too much because what happens in the first part of the film plays out in the second and the third. Gosling plays a motorcycle carnival performer. And sorry, ladies, he has bleach blonde hair and lots of tattoos, but it's still Ryan Gosling. He comes back to a certain town where he had a tryst the year before with Eva Mendes, which all small town girls look like Eva Mendes, and finds out that they have a child, but she's with another guy. She has moved on. He wants to do things right and take care of them, even if it means wind up pulling some bank jobs with Australian that guy Ben Mendelsohn, who I'll get to in a little bit. So we have a loner with a love of vehicular speed who wants to take care of a woman and a child. Sounds a little bit like Drive.
Yeah.
Only not as coldly perceived. So there's that part. And then Bradley Cooper plays a police officer whose lives really literally cross paths with Ryan Gosling's character. And I don't want to take it from there because, like I said, this is a sweeping epic drama. Not Lawrence of Arabia as far as size, but of story.
Yeah.
There's a whole section involving Bradley Cooper's character. And then the third part, it goes 15 years later.
Yeah.
By the way, Gina, you're going to be happy to know Bradley Cooper doesn't age a bit in 15 years, apparently, according to this film. But there's two plot points that just made me wave the penalty flag on this. One was Cooper's character is shot and has to go see the police department psychiatrist. And this is where this moment where the police psychiatrist informs the police officer about the person he shot that they had a child. I don't know any doctor that would really do that.
Yeah.
And then there's a plot point involving the children of people 15 years prior.
Yeah.
So I remember when we all saw Clint Eastwood's film Hereafter, which was also with Matt Damon, and which was a really nice film until we went on an incredible stretch to have three different storylines meet at the same event.
Yeah.
That's how much of a stretch this was.
Yeah.
So good performances. Ray Liotta's in this as well. But yeah, just too much of a stretch. So there's that. You got a response for that, Kobe, or are you Googling a lot?
It's not terrible.
Not terrible. That's good. And one of that guys I want to bring up is Australian actor Ben Mendelsohn, who's quite good in this. He's got a handful of scenes with Gosling. And I remember Grantland did a nice piece on him. I think this is one of the guys I'm trying to remember his name so he's no longer a that guy. And the first thing I really noticed him in was the great Australian crime drama Animal Kingdom.
Mm.
He was one of the brothers. He was one of Jackie Weaver's boys. But prior to that, I know he was in the film Australia because apparently half the Australian Film Actors Guild were in Australia. He was in Knowing, Nicolas Cage knocking off his debt. He was in Killer Elite. He was in the bad Joel Schumacher film Trespass. But he was also in Killing Him Softly, which I liked with Brad Pitt, and Dark Knight Rises. And he's notably good in this one.
Do you really need to say the bad Joel Schumacher film? I mean,
isn't that
implied?
Well, I think he's made some good films.
He's made one or two DVDs.
I like Falling Down.
Yeah.
I like Falling Down, and I think he directed... No, he did not direct Car Wash. He wrote it. The man wrote Car Wash. But yeah, I know. It's kind of redundant. So, yeah. So now, also on DVD and Blu-ray, The Sapphires, which is inspired by a true story. not based on a true story, inspired by, which means I guess they can take more liberties. I don't know. But it's about a girl group of Aborigines who wind up getting a job touring and performing for the soldiers in Vietnam in the late 60s. So you get a little bit of and at the very beginning, you are informed through place cards about the treatment of Aborigines in Australia until the late 60s.
Yeah.
So, yes, you will be seeing, and they sing soul tunes, American soul tunes. So don't be surprised if you also see cuttings of the civil rights movement in the American South coinciding with the Aborigine treatment in the city. So it is kind of, and then, of course, they go off to Vietnam. So you could say it's Dreamgirls meets For the Boys.
Wow.
Without the bad old age makeup.
Isn't Chris O'Dowd in that?
Chris, and that's the other one. I have to remember the name Chris O'Dowd, the Irish that guy. He plays the band leader and keyboardist. And I remember seeing him in the God Awful This Is 40 and Bridesmaids. First thing I really noticed him in was Pirate Radio. So I'm trying to remember his name as well. So anyway, good, not great. You also have finally a film version of On the Road.
Yes.
With Walter Salles, who I thought was an interesting choice, but a good choice because he did that other really fine road picture, the Motorcycle Diaries.
Yeah.
And this is a film, and Coppola, for SS4 Coppola, whose other film I'll get to in a little bit, he's an executive producer on this. Zoetrope Pictures put it out. Garrett Hedlund is one of the characters. By the way, there's even though Stacey Sudeville doesn't believe me, Kristen Stewart smiles in this film and looks like she's having a good time. But this is a film that has been in development. It's been in talk for decades. And everybody from Sean Penn, I guess as an actor and a director, and Francis Coppola was going to make it. I mean, everybody who is, you know, big and bold and manly have been linked to this film for decades.
I liked it. It's basically a movie, or it's a book that basically people have sort of dismissed as unfilmable. And they actually made a pretty decent film about it.
They did.
I thought they captured, you know, the chaos and the love of freedom for its own sake, and just, you know, these are people literally without a plan, and they sort of eschew the idea of even having a plan in life.
Yep.
And just sort of what happens to them. They do sort of, you know, obviously change things around a little bit, elevate certain characters. A
lot of cameos. There's
a lot of cameos.
Amy Adams, Viggo Mortensen, Terrence Howard, Elizabeth Moss. I like that they don't pull any punches. Yes, there is, especially as far as sexuality, sexual choices, drug use. Fine soundtrack, I might add.
Yeah, this movie got a lot of heat out of Cannes from, what was that, late last year, early this year, I can't remember when it was, because obviously Kristen Stewart has a couple of nude scenes in this, and they're actually kind of throwaway scenes. There's a really sexy scene where she dances with the secondary character, and that is a scorching hot scene, much hotter than any of the naked stuff. Yep.
And as I waited while watching the credits, 37 locations throughout North America. So,
if you're a fan of the book, I would definitely rent the movie. I would say this is as good a version of a movie they could make out of the book, I think, as possible.
Yep. So, you know, 50 years, not bad. Not bad at all. Also, the documentary West of Memphis, which if you've never seen any of the Paradise Lost documentaries, which is about the kids in West Memphis who were found guilty of murder, and mostly because they had long hair and they listened to Metallica. So, well, Peter Jackson produced this documentary, West of Memphis, and much to its credit, I thought I was going to be bored because I knew all this stuff, but they were able to find new angles. And if you thought the dad in the Paradise Lost films was a hideous human being, well, there's another dad that's even worse. And the fact that the original dad, who was at times deemed a suspect by the filmmakers, you get to see him in a slightly better light.
Yeah.
So that's worth checking out. But I didn't get a chance to mention this last week, and I really wanted to. I finally watched the Francis Ford Coppola film Twixt. There's two T's, not a candy bar. And as people were hyping it, it was his smallest budgeted film since Dementia 13. And it's on digital, and it stars a 50 cent less Val Kilmer, because he was making movies with Curtis Jackson, way too many, he's referred to as a third rate Stephen King, visiting a small town on his own book tour, hardware store. And he winds getting wrapped up into an investigation of a murder case thanks to old grizzled sheriff Bruce Dern. Very excited. Ben Chaplin shows up as the ghost of Edgar Allan Poe. Ellie Fanning is in this. And it's kind of a throwback to the creepy old town movies of the 50s and 60s. And it's a lot of fun. I also mentioned voiceover work by Tom Waits, who I think, Kobe, we should add to the voiceover wish list.
Tom Waits?
Tom Waits! Not singing Tom Waits, talking Tom Waits. No. I like Tom Waits as a vocalist, too. Be quiet. But there's also a friend of mine who is a musician from Oxford, Ohio, named Lisa Bialas, who's also an actress, and she's got a scene in this.
Wow.
So I thought it was very, very cool that she had one scene in a diner with Val Kilmer. And anyway, it's a lot of fun. It's not as high art as Youth versus Youth or Tetro, his last couple of experimental art films. So I think it's worth checking out.
Cool. It's also an art film.
It is an art film. I just said that. Okay, do we have the Dead People intro?
You know we do.
Doing our the annual show of Dead People We Like.
there's a pretty big one this week.
We don't have time for Dead People We Don't Like.
Yes.
I love you, Chris.
I am immortalized.
Yes, you. Oh, yes. As long as the show's walking the earth. Now, we'll get to Karen Black in a little bit, but I want to mention, especially not just because of PBS, but documentary filmmaker Gail Levin, who did several documentaries for American Masters, died at the age of 67. Some of the films, Levine. It's spelled like Levin, but it sells Levine, says the New York Times. But some of her documentaries included Marilyn Monroe's Still Life, one that we all love here at Film Sociology, Jeff Bridges, The Dude Abides from American Masters, Cab Calloway, Sketches. So there's Guys and Dolls, Off the Record, as well as the great performances documentary, Making the Misfits, about the Marilyn Monroe and Clark Gable's last film. For you fans of Wizard of Oz, one of the surviving Munchkins, Margaret Pellegrini, I believe. She's 89. I think there's two left now.
Wow.
And I believe the oldest is 93.
Wow.
So she's no longer with us. And whenever it's something like this, I always want to go to their page and find out if they did anything else. I checked, and she did. She was uncredited in the 1971 Dalton Trumbo film Johnny Got His Gun.
Oh, wow.
See, yeah, that's what you get here at Film Sociology, that information.
Very disturbing movie, by the way, if you've never seen it.
And very effective. Yeah. And we go to, now, of course, Kobe, you said the 70s were?
Different time.
Different time, but people with unconventional looks got a chance to be movie stars and sex symbols, and we raise a glass to Karen Black. Because she was part of that, kind of a character actress who also had leading ladies. She wound up playing, as your generation, Kobe, probably knows her as the slightly cockeyed, goofy-looking old lady in films like House of a Thousand Corpses. But she got an Academy Award nomination in 1970 for Five Easy Pieces. She, of course, was in Easy Rider. She was in Drive, He Said. She was in kind of that Nicholson, Hopper, Fonda circle of hippie filmmaking friends. Siskel Pike, Portnoy's Complaint. She was Myrtle Wilson in the Robert Redford Great Gatsby, later played by Isla Fisher. Airport 75, where she landed the plane, thanks to Charlton Heston. Day of the Locust, which I need, and everybody, I say 90% of people, you bring up Karen Black, and even though it's a TV movie, we'll have to bring it up, Trilogy of Terror.
Yeah.
With the doll. Kobe, you won't be watching that.
Nope.
Yeah.
Too bad. She has one of those actresses. She had a great start to her career, and then just kind of things tapered off, and she ended up in a lot of, not that, you know, Bees. I love horror movies, but yeah, not very good.
Yeah, because she Day of the Locust, Nashville, Family Plot. She was in Hitchcock's last film, Burnt Offerings, Capricorn One, In Praise of Older Women, one of the first R-rated movies I got to see on cable, and yeah, then it just kind of.
Yeah.
Can she bake a parrot cherry pie? She was in It's Alive 3,
yeah.
Island of the Alive. Yeah, I have it. Return of the Rollerblade 7. I mean, she's got 9 pages on her IMDb. So, yeah. but thank you, Karen.
Hey, she kept working at least.
That's right, working, which is all we hope to do. And there's lots of titles on old titles on Blu-ray. I'm not going to talk about them because we don't have time, right, Kobe?
We don't have time.
So, what's on the film yet in 30 seconds?
Lots of good stuff. Some commentary. I actually did a podcast. Yeah, I know. It's been like 6 weeks since we did a podcast. What can I say? Baby.
Yeah.
That's my anybody ask me why I didn't do something lately, I just say baby.
Yep.
Baby. I did want to mention...
Very
quickly, debate going raging right now about people who want to use their phones and talk during movies.
Don't.
And thinks that you're just being a grumpy old man if you're... If you want to have silence and darkness.
We're already human beings.
Go to Roger Moore's Movie Nation blog. He's got all the back and forth going on there.
Okay, Soylent Green is people. Zardoz has spoken. And go see a good movie you deserve. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Go Fort Myers. Go Lions. Go Tigers. Stay in first place. God help us all.
We gone.
We gone.
Baby.